Good morning. That's so cool when you do that. That's fun. Myrna and I are sharing something of an anniversary this weekend. It's just exactly a year ago that I had a medical procedure that was essentially life-saving. I had a stem cell transplant. There was a list of events that led up to that, though, and I'm going to review some of those with you. This isn't how I always looked. It was a few short months ago, it seems, that I had a totally different appearance. You'll see it up here on the screen. That's me at the clinic up at OHSU sometime after that stem cell transplant. Appearances were a little different at that time, so we've come a long ways. Leading up to that, I had a situation with low platelet counts and a swelling in my throat that we thought was just a nasty sore throat, and we wound up at the emergency room at OHSU in a situation where the doctors there decided I probably had a malignant mass of some sort here, and they scheduled me for a surgery. That was kind of a punch to the gut. And then a physician there who was in residence suggested that we should be looking at palliative care. That wasn't really all that comforting either. They wheeled me down to the emergency room a few days later. They were going to, to the operating room. They were going to do a surgery on this thing. I was on the gurney. I was in the operating room. I had an IV hooked up. They were just ready to administer the general anesthetic when a couple other guys came running into the room and said, scrub the mission. We're not going to do the surgery. That was kind of a high anxiety moment too, but a little bit of a relief because they decided to scrub that because they determined that this wasn't cancer after all. They wheeled me back into the room and gave me the diagnosis of AML, which is acute myeloblastic leukemia. Well, that wasn't really too much comfort either. And again, there was a suggestion for palliative care. During the next few days after that, I had some time away from the hospital so Myrna and I could line up our wills, our advanced directives, set a few other life things in order before I returned to the hospital. We determined and decided with our medical care providers that the best avenue of treatment for me was a bone marrow stem cell transplant. Finding a donor for that can be kind of daunting, but God provided a perfect match in my brother, who's with us here today, and a near perfect match in my sister, Peggy. I returned to the hospital for the first round of chemo. You see, before they give you the stem cell transplant, they have to kill off all of your bone marrow, and they try to do that without killing you in the process. I had a PICC line installed, which is just basically a plastic tube with direct access into my veins. I had my first bone marrow biopsy. Now, for those of you who don't know what that means, that they bore a hole in your bone and draw bone marrow and check it out. It's not a real pleasant experience. Then I got the news that the first round of chemo wasn't entirely successful. The bone marrow was not completely obliterated, not yet. They gave me an echocardiogram to see if my heart could withstand another round of chemo, and round two of chemo came. Then I had my second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth bone marrow biopsies in a matter of 3 days. Seems that some technicians are better at this than others. They had to keep repeating it. I had, as a result of that, IV drug-induced hallucinations. I had my first round of neutropenic fevers with rigors, and you can ask somebody that knows what that is. Then I had C. diff. Again, ask somebody in the healthcare industry what that is. I had megacolon, which I thought was very uncomfortable. I found out later from the main nurse that we had that in my case, it was nearly fatal. I didn't know it at the time. The relief for that was an NG tube. It's a nice little plastic thing. They shove up your nose, through your sinuses, down into your stomach to try to relieve the pressure that's going on with the megacolon. At the time, they put you also on a nice diet of a few ounces of ice chips every few hours. That's all I had for days. Then they had to put a new PICC line in because the one I had got infected. Then I had more blood transfusions, platelet infusions, IVs of every sort, and what was determined to be a 4-week hospital stay turned into 9 weeks on that particular round. I had more chemo as an outpatient. I was at home where I couldn't go out into the public without medical masks and antiseptics for my hands and whatnot. My immune system was essentially totally shot. More bone marrow biopsies. Installation of a central line to replace the PICC line. Those go into your chest, they tunnel up over your collarbone and implant that thing straight into your jugular vein. Then I was returned to the hospital for the stem cell transplant, but before that, more chemo. Another echocardiogram to see if my heart was still capable of taking on the next round of chemo. more bone marrow biopsy, stem cell infusion by the central line, a return of the fever with the rigors. Then I had drug-induced diabetes, so I had to do blood testing and shoot insulin and all that kind of stuff. Then I had to take out my central line because it got infected. I had a third PICC line installed. Then I finally was released from the hospital with 32 prescription drugs that I had to take every day. And when I came home, my wife Myrna's there with a completely trashed out back. So now instead of she taking care of me, we were trying to take care of each other the best way we could. I wound up with a compression fracture in one of my vertebrae. Both of us were on walkers and on pain pills. And I was back taking insulin shots. I developed what's called graft versus host disorder. In my case, it manifested itself as a rash that felt like 1,000 mosquito bites and very difficult to relieve that itching. Then, about the time I thought things were getting better, I wound up with something called pericarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart sac. I thought it was worse than it was, but it was plenty bad enough. That gave me an ambulance ride back to OHSU and another week in the hospital, and finally back home with Myrna and I on competing walkers. I had up to 3 days a week of having to go up to the lab for testing and biopsies and all kinds of infusions and IVs. I was incapable of driving due to pain and the weakened state I was in, so my sister-in-law, Darlene, drove me most of the time. My brother did some of the time. Eventually, we graduated from a walker to a cane. Myrna had back surgery, and gradually we got to where we are today. All in all, I would have to say that the experience was awesome. Completely awesome. I had a great view from my room. God caused my business to not only survive, but to function well and actually flourish under being run by family members, some of whom are here right now. Cindy's one of them. And it actually grew, and loyalty of our clients was in place. But more than that, I had quality time with God like I never had before in my entire life. It was as though I was staring straight into God's face half the time. That was an encounter beyond what I've ever had in the past. I had uninterrupted opportunity for prayer. I had virtually unlimited time to listen to God. I had time to gaze out my window at the wonders of God's creation. And my window gave me a view over the Willamette River, Ross Island, and the East Hill. So I had a lot to look at and be enthused about. It gave me an opportunity to be totally immersed in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. God led me to those two books for a reason. And I read and I meditated on his perfect prescription for living out of that. And in the process, I developed a foundational preparation for things that were yet to come in the next leg of my journey. I had opportunity to witness to my healthcare workers. This is something that doesn't come naturally for me, but I found myself being a vehicle, of a tool in the hand of the Holy Spirit, you might say, even to the point of giving something we laughingly refer to as a sermonette to one of the doc squads that came around, a doctor, a physician's assistant, and an RN. Through it all, there was a spiritual awareness, a full knowledge that there was megawatts of prayer support coming our way. From this congregation, from my brother's congregation, from my sister-in-law's congregation, from congregations we don't even know, but the prayers were there, the prayers were felt, the prayers carried us through all of this. I developed a firsthand experience of that peace that passes understanding. I'd like to explain that to all of you. Unfortunately, I can't. You have to just experience it. All I can say is that since the initial diagnosis of AML, the episode of the last-minute reprieve from the surgeon's knife, since those times, neither one of us have had any problems. We have both been completely at peace with whatever God has led us through. I received a clarity of purpose for which God brought me through this. I know his request of me, and I'm compelled to engage it. Full appreciation of the love of God came to us through his people, whom he placed all about us, through the healthcare workers, the prayer support of people from Beautiful Savior and other congregations, the meals that were provided to us by all of you and coordinated by special members of this facility, namely Dora Morrison, and the full knowledge that God's understanding, full knowledge to me and understanding that what God calls us to do, he also empowers us to do. Look again at the picture on the screen. It may be a little hard to tell, but in that I'm actually smiling. I was hooked up to several IV infusions. I was too weak to drive myself there, and I was in pain. But I know that was only possible because of the gift of God's people and the peace and the love his people shared with us. The anniversary we're celebrating was, it was this day that I received the stem cell transplant from my brother, who happens to be out here in the audience with us today.
It was 2 days ago.
It was actually 2 days ago. Was it an anniversary?
What's a day or two here and there if your life has been saved for a purpose?
We talked about it early on, and we decided we would do it one day at a time, and God could take care of one day. We could change the last. We didn't know what was coming. So one day is what we did. When he finally came home from the hospital, he woke me up in the middle of the night and said, "You've got to get up and help me." I said, "What do you want?" He said, "I think I'm having a heart attack. I want you to call 911. We live really close to the fire station, and they were there just in a heartbeat. And the best part of that was Judd Walkland was on that call. And he asked me how I was doing, and people never asked me that. They asked how Tom was doing. But I was so grateful that Judd was there, because it just also proved God knew what was going on, and he put Jed there for a reason. I had already, before that, started having just horrific, horrific backaches. It hurt so bad, and I was taking pain pills, but they made me really wacko. So I
can testify to that one.
So I took the last pill March 22nd, and I went into the hospital on the 23rd. I had talked to the doctor ahead of time, and he said, "You'll be in the hospital 3 or 4 days and off work several months." And I knew it was going to hurt when I had the surgery done. He was cutting him 5 vertebrae. And when he got in there, he told Tom there was a cyst that he had to dig out, and so that took a half an hour longer for the surgery. But after I got there, a Dr. Pock, I don't know anything except she was a really tall Oriental lady, and she gave me something that was going to relax me for my surgery. What she did was give me something that knocked me out, totally and completely out. And I know nothing after that, except for Tom said she came in later and said, "She's a lightweight, she doesn't need it anymore." And then in the morning, I was kind of shocked because it was morning when I woke up. And I did not have one, not a single ounce of pain. And I'd already prepared that my back wouldn't hurt from the bones, but I was really scared that the incision would be very painful because it was a huge incision. Nothing. I said, "I'd like to go home." And the nurse said, "Well, you should stay here a little longer." And I said, "Why?" "I don't have any pain. You're not going to do anything except feed me. And I can do that at home." So they let me go home. In under 24 hours, I was at the hospital, operated on, and back home again. And when I got home, a lot of what I was fed were meals that Dora got together with some other people and brought us lots and lots of food. So neither one had to cook. And now we're cooking. You can send us some more meals, Dora. But it's all because of the love and the prayers of this congregation, and God answers prayer. He doesn't always say yes. He doesn't always say no. Sometimes he says not yet. So keep praying. It works.
Thank you all.